This program is sponsored by Mouse Mesh. Mice get into your home via the air bricks. Mouse Mesh is a humane alternative to preventing mice and other unwanted guests from entering your home.
Welcome to Rich Planet TV. I'm Richard D. Hall. Just to firstly remind you that this current series of Rich Planet TV is a 12-show series, and this is show number 6. After today's show, there will be 6 more fortnightly shows, which takes us to the 4th of November 2016. After this, I will be planning a UK tour commencing probably in March or April next year. I hope to release one or two films on the 2017 tour. You may also be aware that I recently released a film on DVD, which I said I could not say what it was about. I can assure you this was not some kind of marketing ploy. It was done because I did not want it to be known that I was researching this issue before a significant number of people had watched the film. This was because I received what I consider to be a death threat as a direct result of researching the film. Thank you to everyone who has bought the DVD on film. I very much appreciate your support. The feedback I have had is very positive. So I can now announce that the film is entitled Didcot Deception, Jed Allen Not Guilty, and covers my independent investigation into the 2015 Didcot murders. You may remember just over a year ago, our brainless mainstream media referring to these murders as the Wolverine murders. The supposed perpetrator, 21-year-old Jed Allen, without any motive whatsoever, is said to have used a hunting knife to murder his own mother, who people said he cared about very much, murder his 6-year-old sister, who he adored, and murdered his stepfather, then conveniently committed suicide just 2 hours later. But after my detailed investigation into this case, I now believe he did not murder anyone, and I also believe he was murdered in a cleverly orchestrated plot in which some crime scene evidence was planted by the real perpetrators in an attempt to pin the blame on him. My investigation is now complete, and there is only so far I can go without judicial authority. So details of my investigation have been sent to relevant authorities. Now, you might be slightly puzzled as to why I decided to investigate what seems like a domestic incident and is not in the same category as, let's say, a false flag operation. Well, the term false flag operation does not really encompass much of what is going on today. What is happening is based on pure deception. But the motives for using deception in killings, or indeed in fake killings, can vary. Instead of the term false flag operation, I would call them intelligence-led, media-assisted deception executions, or an ill-made operation. Once viewers have seen and digested the Didcot film, assuming my hypothesis is correct, they can then compare this incident with other incidents where deception plays a key role and where the media are used to sensationalise a totally false narrative about what occurred. So although the Didcot murders were in a domestic setting, I believe it can be demonstrated that they were fundamentally linked to other national or even international terror-type events. This is because the modus operandi suggests the group that planned and perpetrated the Didcot murders may be the same personnel who are behind the fabricated terror events being reported in our media at the moment. This may seem like a far stretch for some, but this is all explained at the end of the Didcot Deception film. On today's show, I speak to a whistleblower who has a great knowledge about microwaves and about what effect microwaves have on human beings. Today's guest in the 1960s trained at the UK government microwave warfare establishment. He worked with the underwater bomb disposal unit, which used microwaves within its unit. In the 1970s, one of his tasks over an 11-year period was to debrief spies involved in microwave warfare. Welcome, Barry Trower.
Hello, sir. Thank you very much.
Okay, then, Barry, can you first just give us a brief summary of your early life in terms of your education and your work?
I studied microwaves from 1959 to pass my entrance exam into the Royal Navy. I worked on radar and with radar and all aspects of microwave warfare. Mm-hmm. Like all divers, I was involved in underwater demolition, which is what all divers do. And microwaves were involved with booby-trapping mines. So, again, I studied microwaves. When I left the Royal Navy, I was invited to teach in one of the top security establishments, and I won't go into that too far, but where I was teaching were captured spies, and in the 60s, 70s, 80s, microwaves were developing as the new Cold War atomic bomb, as they are today, with the big HAARP and the big transmitting stations around the world. Microwaves are now the new atomic bomb.
Right.
But they were being developed in those days, and any information that could be gleaned from captured spies or anybody of interest, I would filter out. It was under a scheme laid down by Sir William Melvin. Mm-hmm. It was his brainchild, and I supplied the information to MI5, MI6.
So the spies then...
were captured.
Yes, yeah, so they would have knowledge of certain microwave technologies, is that...?
Yes, they would have knowledge, not all of them, some of them would have knowledge of the technologies. When I left that job, I went into teaching full-time. I taught, as I still do occasionally, advanced physics, some mathematics. I have my first degree is physics. I specialised in nuclear and atomic physics, and I specialised with my dissertation into writing about absorption of the far end of the microwave spectrum. My second degree is a research degree where I specialised in environmental influences on thinking processes.
So what year were the 2 degrees, Barry?
I can't think of it at the moment. I'm going, we're talking 80s, right. 90s.
So when you were working, providing information to, say, MI5 and MI6, at what point did you stop, let's say, having access to
Can I just finish my qualifications before I forget?
Yeah, sure.
I also have a teaching diploma in human physiology.
Right.
And I'm the author of the TETRA report for the Police Federation of England and Wales, and the higher confidential report for a different police union, and I lecture all over the world now on the dangers of microwave irradiation. Right. Sorry, so we'll go back.
Yeah. So just let me differentiate then, okay. Because a lot of the papers that you cite are in the public domain.
Yes.
Yeah. And how much of what you learned is not in the public domain? Like perhaps your earlier work when you were doing debriefing and that kind of thing?
Oh, quite a bit.
And is there much that you can reveal that's currently secret that's not in the public domain? I mean, is...
Oh, there is some, because I've seen it published or mentioned elsewhere. What I cannot reveal are names, dates and places.
Right.
Because the scheme that I was working under for Sir William Melvin, it was his brainchild, that may still be being used today. Mm-hmm. It tends to be used in times of war or terrorism. Mm-hmm. So it may be used today, and I could be putting people's lives at risk.
Right.
So I wouldn't go too far into that, but any other questions I could probably answer.
Right. Now, you mentioned there the 2001 report that you wrote essentially for the benefit of the police who were considering taking on the Tetra technology to yep. use in their communication systems. So I've had a look at that report. Now, it's quite a good report for people to maybe get a good overview of the effects of microwaves on people. Because you cite other papers within that report, Barry. Can you just mm-hmm. give us a quick overview of that report and some of the other papers that you mentioned in there?
The 2001 report, I was commissioned... This is very interesting. I was commissioned by the... I congratulate you on your questions, actually. They're very good. I was commissioned by the Police Federation. I was picked up here by... three Federation officers, two of them chiefs of areas, whole areas, counties, excuse me. I was driven to London. I met all of the Federation officers. I laid out the information that was dangerous about Tetra and the fact that it was a government... epidemiological study, or to put it more simply, an experiment mm-hmm. on police officers to see how many cancers and other illnesses would develop mm-hmm. from using this technology.
Right.
Can I just finish this?
Yeah.
then they suggested that I write the report and document everything and lay it all out, which I said I would. I came back, and this is actually important. I was invited to the top security office with a police secretary. She did all the typing. She did all the computer work. I don't use computers. And then I walked out with nothing. And then the leader of the police federation, there were two ladies, one up in the Midlands and one here, who were, let me say, friendly with Tetra Airwave. One, I believe, left and became an executive. The other also left, and I don't know whether she became an executive, but her opening words at the conference were to all of the police officers, "Nothing is going to stop Tetra."
Right.
That was the police, the Fed. And they denied that I was commissioned to write the report. They denied that I ever went to London and wrote the report. And one of the police officers who had access to the report, when he heard that the boss was now working with Tetra and my report was going to be just totally scrapped, mm-hmm. he released it.
Right, I see.
He released it out, and that was the first report.
Right. Well, if people want to have a look at it, you can download it from the link on the screen. And just to point out, Barry, the police use a different communication system to the general public, i.e. the public will use mobile phones, but the police are currently using this Tetra system. Can you tell us, before the police used Tetra, what was their system?
Well, they had the old harmless... in terms of injury, analog waves. In other words, like the old radio, the home service, the light program, the long wave
yeah.
analog service.
Like CB radio.
Yeah, which was perfectly well. All they needed to do was put up a few more big aerials and issue a few more handsets.
Yeah.
But a document came out which I received from a person who works in the classified area of documents, I received a document which said that at the time the Tetra system is the gubbins inside is Motorola, which is American. Mm-hmm. And the American president, in this document, the American president told our president that whatever happens, get Tetra out. And the reason for this was because we would then be used. The British police have one hell of a reputation, good reputation, all over the world. And we were then used as an advertisement for all of Europe and other countries.
When you say get Tetra out, you mean adopt it?
Adopt it. Yeah. So we encouraged the rest of the world to adopt Tetra. And this document said, which I published in my report, that once it was out, the Americans have the ability to then listen in.
Right.
And Tetra isn't just used by the police. It's used by the secret services, the government agencies, mm-hmm. everybody using secret communications. Mm-hmm. So the Americans automatically had the ability to listen in to 30 or so countries, secret services and police and everything else.
Right. All right. Well, I've got a few more questions on Tetra, which I'll come back to, Barry.
Okay.
But I've heard you in previous interviews refer to hundreds, if not thousands of papers and books that you've come across in your time. And am I right in thinking that it was actually your job to study some of these papers?
Absolutely. And I still do.
So let me ask you then, why were you tasked to do all that research? Or was it your own research that you were, was it your job to find out all of the effects of microwaves? Or was it just your own?
I congratulate you again on your brilliant questions. No. In fact, I don't want to be associated with microwaves and this. And it's not what I really like researching. I'm actually at university. I studied physics and philosophy, mm-hmm. and I love researching philosophy. But I'm how many people? I don't consider myself an expert. It's not a word I use, and I'm not the only one with my knowledge. But how many people do you know are willing to speak about the Cold War microwave warfare, have degrees in nuclear and atomic physics, specialised in microwaves, lecture in advanced physics, have been involved since 1959, and have read virtually all of the papers and had access to the secret papers, that are willing to sit in front of you and say, look, let's get the truth out there to the people because nobody else will do it. I'm a whistleblower, like any other whistleblower, and I seem to be the only one in this country, and that's where we are.
So in your role when you worked, let's say, for the government, were they tasking you to look at those papers, or was that something you were doing yourself?
Well, it was my job.
Right.
If you're in studying microwaves, every single... the one thing the military are good for is knowledge. Mm-hmm. If you have a question, it will be answered. The military are very good at answering questions and allowing you to study.
Right.
And I have one of these brains. When you go, and I carry out, I study, even now, at my age, I study 5 to 6 hours in an evening. It's what I do.
Yeah.
I learn 5 to 6 hours. It's addictive. Like some people are addicted to heroin or whatever, alcohol, I am addicted to learning new research and studying and writing maths and thinking. And I will be doing it for 5 hours tonight. Mm-hmm. So I've studied all the new papers as they've come out. And I do every single night.
And if somebody wanted to study a body of those papers, is there an internet resource somewhere that people can go to, or would they just use Google, or where would they find these papers on microwaves?
Two people, if not three, in my travels around the world have said, you know, thank you for your lecture. And I know they're on the internet, but I've never, ever used a computer. I've never looked into
right,
one.
Right.
But two or three professors or government officials have said, look, if we want to change the law, or we want to help our people, or we want to do this, we will need donk, 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 donk.
Yeah.
Do you have the papers? And I have said, yes, they are now released under the Freedom of Information. If you know where to go and what to look for, they are available.
Yeah.
I will stay on an extra day or two in this country. Would you like to download them, scan them, put them on disk? Because at conferences and in legal cases, you need the front page of the document and the relevant page, because they're 600-700 pages long.
Right.
So they download these, and they are all on disk. And if somebody says, can I have the documents, I will say, yes, they are on disk. Do you have a computer with you? Download them.
Right.
Simple as that.
All right. But there are several papers mentioned in your 2001 paper for the police.
They're all on disk.
And they're probably on the internet, I would imagine.
They're all on disk anyway.
Right. Okay.
And the disk is available. I mean, you can download them.
Right.
If you want to.
Right.
I've got the disks here.
Right. Okay. Well, maybe we can look into that and maybe put them on a server where someone can get them. All right. So are you doing consultancy work at the moment, Barry, where you're asked to be, say, an expert witness or this kind of thing? What's
Yes, I'm very strict. I will act as a consultant. I have always worked free of charge since I've started. I have never ever charged a penny, and I do not accept gifts. I refuse all gifts, I refuse all money, and I will be a consultant if I'm not described as an expert.
Right.
I don't like the term expert, because it implies that you know everything, and I don't know everything.
Right.
I'm not an electrical engineer, I'm not a medical doctor. And I often come across questions, I say, I don't have the knowledge. So I do not like expert, but yes, I am a consultant. I tend to visit about six countries a year to lecture to. It's usually medical institutions, universities, royal families, governments. Right. I tend to now stick to those.
Now, you mentioned to me before the interview that you'd spoke at the Welsh Assembly, the Welsh government. Tell us what happened there?
Yeah, I was invited to speak at the Welsh Assembly building. I spoke to a room full of people. Now, I don't know who they were, because I don't know the Welsh government. And I do know that my lecture is on the internet. Mm-hmm. And I do know the feedback I had afterwards was that the Welsh Assembly people made recommendations to Westminster that they wanted to reduce the power, do this, do that, to reduce the illness, particularly with children and pregnant women and the elderly and the sick. Mm-hmm. And the feedback I got was that they were told by Westminster that they did not have the power to introduce these changes, and Westminster would not sanction them, and the whole thing was really a waste of time.
Right. Now, we'll come back on to Tetra in a moment, but just want to, just for people's general sort of knowledge about the electromagnetic spectrum.
Yep.
I've got a little diagram there, which is the basic frequency, starting at very low frequencies, going up to what you might call ionizing radiation frequencies. Just tell us, Barry, what ionizing radiation is.
Right, ionizing radiation, do you want me to point this up
here?
Yes, yeah. Ionizing radiation are the, from going down here, the ultraviolet, the X-ray and the gamma rays.
Right.
Okay.
So anything higher in frequency than ultraviolet and up over is known as ionizing radiation.
This is ionizing radiation.
Yeah.
And what ionizing radiation does, it has the ability to go straight through the cells in your body, directly damage the DNA, and cause any number of illnesses, including 200 different types of cancers. And this is why X-ray machines are limited and gamma rays are used to destroy cancer cells in the body. Visible light and coming up, infrared is heat. The millimeter and these two are actually microwaves.
Yep.
The millimeter are microwaves.
Very short microwaves, or shorter than...
Well, microwaves are from a millimeter to a meter.
Yeah.
Those are microwaves. Those are microwaves. And then, of course, you go up into the longer waves, the television.
Yeah. Which are considered more safe, but possibly have their own dangers as well.
Well, no, they're not safe. A doctor, Debbie Eklund, wrote a brilliant paper several years ago where she made a list of the epidemiological studies about radio and TV transmitters.
Right.
And found they were exactly the same as the microwave transmitters. There were increased cancers, increased suicides, increased children's health problems around Crystal Palace and all these ones. So it takes longer, but they are not safe.
Right.
It just takes longer.
Okay.
And of course, you've got the infrared here. The microwaves go into the infrared.
Yeah.
Infrared is really heat.
Yeah. Now, microwaves, the definition is 300 megahertz to 300 gigahertz.
Yeah.
Which is 300 million cycles per second, or 300,000 million cycles per second.
Yeah, that's actually 1 millimeter to a meter.
To a meter, yeah. And within that, you've got your tetra, which is 380 megahertz.
Yeah.
Mobile phones, which seem to be spread over a few different ranges. You've got the 900 megahertz band, 2100 megahertz, and 1800 megahertz, the different 3G and the different networks. You've got microwave ovens, which work at 2450 megahertz. So you've got a mobile phone range there at 2,100 megahertz, and a microwave oven is only at 2,450 megahertz.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
it's not vastly different, and we all know the effects of a microwave oven.
Oh yeah.
Decked, your decked phones, which are if you have a cordless phone in your house, that's 1,900 megahertz.
Yeah.
And Wi-Fi again is at 2.4 gigahertz, a similar frequency to
the oven.
Yeah.
Yep.
Similar to the oven. Now, let's just look at a few of these, Barry. Let's look at Wi-Fi, 2.4 gigahertz. It also uses some higher frequencies as well in certain systems. Is it not the case that with Wi-Fi, they've put a limit on the, you know, milliwatts per square meter that your wireless router can operate at? Because the router in my house, I was trying to get it to go further than it did, and I couldn't get the power turned up, and I found that there was an actual ceiling on the power limit. Is that they've done for safety reasons?
No, in fact, it makes it worse.
Go on.
2.4 gigahertz Wi-Fi, and this is published, and I have the documents. Both the Soviet Union and the German scientists, and in fact the Americans, they have all published that the Wi-Fi frequency is a known, proven, and accepted stealth weapon frequency used directly to cause harm. It is a known weapons frequency. So Wi-Fi itself is a weapon. There is no getting away from that. It is an internationally recognized weapon frequency, and it is designed to cause harm. That's the first thing. Can I just, my brain is, where you have a reduced power, in fact, that is even more dangerous. It is known and published, Swartz, Provnich, Henry Lai, Neil Cherry, four internationally recognized university professors. They have all published low frequency can be more dangerous and is certainly as dangerous as high frequency. And the reason is...
Do you mean low power output?
Low power. Sorry, low power. Low power. Low power is as or more dangerous as high power. And the reason is that if you expose yourself to high power, you have defense mechanisms in your body, which we have evolved with over since we were living in caves to protect us from electric thunderstorms. Namely, for the doctors listening to this, protein 53 in the cells, nuclear core complex in the cells, if they detect an unusual electrical magnetic charge, they will rush around and start to protect and defend the cells.
Okay.
Protein 53, nuclear core complex. Mm. But with a low level, or with pregnant women, were in the uterus, with a low level of power, these particular proteins are not activated because it's below the radar, below the activation level. And with pregnant women and children, they are not yet developed in the immune system. So they don't have this protection anyway. So a low power will come in. It isn't detected by the body's immune system radar. And this is why around transmitters, everything is fine. And then after about 18 months, you start to get your suicides, your leukemias, your cancers. It takes about 18 months, but then they start. And this is why.
So in terms of, let's take household things, decked phones and Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Would you say there's a safe distance to stand away from your wireless router, or what would your recommendation be?
There are no safe microwave levels. Microwaves are not safe. It's like saying, how many, and I've had this at conferences, you know, how many microwaves can I take? And there's a brilliant scientist, Robert Kane, actually answered this question. And it's on page 235 of his report. And it's a report of all of the other research reports. And his answer was, and he said this is a frequently asked question, how long can I use my phone? How long can I sit here? And his question, or his answer is, how lucky do you feel? And it's the same as smoking. When people say, well, how many cigarettes can I smoke? And I say, well, it may be one. I don't know. It depends on your immune system, your makeup. There are no safe microwaves. If you're going to have Wi-Fi in the house, you have it fed with a cable, then it's safe. If you want your iPads, iPods, all these phones, have them fed with a cable. Do not use a walkabout phone. They transmit even when they're back on the thing.
Okay, thanks for that, Barry. Now let's just come back to Tetra and just compare it with mobile phones.
Okay.
There's a website you can go on. I'll put the link on the screen, which it's produced by Ofcom, that shows you all of the transmitter masts around the UK. And if you look at that, you see that maybe one in 15 one in 20 is a tetra mast. Yep. So it's something like that. The majority are mobile phone masts operating at 900, yep. 2100 or 1800 megahertz. But every one in sort of 15 or so is a tetra mast, 380 megahertz. Now, the signal is slightly different in its modulation. Just explain how the tetra signals are different to mobile phone signals.
The tetra signal pulses. Now, and this there is no short answer to this. I give full answers and then you mm-hmm. edit them down if you want. Pulses were known to be dangerous in the year 64 BC. A really clever scientist called Ptolemy found that if he made a wheel, solid wheel, and drilled holes and then spun it in front of people's eyes, in front of a bright source, which may be something burning or the sun, at different spins he could induce different neurological symptoms. The most common one that people would recognize is photosensitive epilepsy, when they say, when you got flashing on the television screen, that. Now, this is where the weapons come from. When I was debriefing spies, I made a list of some 30 to 40 different pulse frequencies that could induce 50 to 60 physiological and neurological symptoms to do with changing the heart, changing vision, changing thinking processes, what have you. And it is the pulses that are mainly used in microwave weapons for many reasons. Now, tetra has a pulse frequency that is known to cause confusion and indecision and to make you just also aggressive. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I recognized as soon as I saw the pulse frequency, and I said to the Police Federation, you cannot use this. It is everything you do not want your emergency services to be. And that is aggressive or indecisive. But they went ahead and used it. And this was a part of the experiment. And it's actually documented that they are studying neurological disorder with this. Right. So
it's 17.6 hertz, 17.6 pulses a second.
Yep, that is known.
Now, I'm just going to play a sequence of square waves pulsed at 17.6 hertz, just to see how quickly you get annoyed with it. So what's the reason why tetra has to be pulsed and the mobile phone ones aren't?
Well, no, the mobile phones are pulsed.
Oh, they are pulsed.
Oh, everything is pulsed.
Right.
Pulsed or modulated, they say. Well, and this is where the argument came in initially. They initially pulsed them, but when people like me said, look, these pulses are dangerous, they then changed the word pulse to modulation.
Right.
And they said, well, a pulse is separate, like if you cut sausages up. A modulation is where the sausages are joined by an infinitesimally thin thread. And they said, there's a piece of energy goes there. But in fact, the actual outcome is the same. Mm-hmm. So pulses and modulations are the same. And in fact, everything is pulsed and modulated. And today, 4G, it is so complex. So with the iPhones and iPads and all these now, smartphones, the waveform is so complex, they can't even tell you what they are. And if they can't tell you what they are, they cannot tell you what they will do in the body. And if they cannot tell you what they can do with the body, there are no safety certificates.
So they can't give you a fixed...
They cannot give you a safety certificate.
Right.
And they certainly can't say, this is safe for a pregnant woman, a child.
So they can't say this is pulsed at 17.6 Hertz. Well,
they can generally say what pulses are going in,
right,
but the pulses interfere with each other,
right,
and then you get different. It's a bit like
harmonics.
It's a bit like if you've got six kids on a trampoline.
Yeah.
You know, it starts to get complicated,
yeah,
and mathematically, it gets immensely complicated.
So, do you know what the reason is why they've decided to use the modulation in the first place, 17.6 Hertz? Is that to get better transmission?
Well, it's to get better transmission, better speech.
Right.
And that particular frequency just aided what they wanted in terms of clarity.
Okay.
But, I mean, we told them it's a weapons frequency and you can't use it. But, of course, this is a medical experiment. It's not due to finish until 2018.
Yeah. So when did they roll it out, Barry, Tetra, well, in the UK?
2001, wasn't it?
Right. I've got a little device here that can measure, give me a very basic indication. It's called a smog meter, which has a display on there. Do you recommend people get these, or do you need a full spectrum analyzer? It's £1,000, or what would you recommend if someone wants to measure?
If you just want one to measure where microwaves are coming from, if it covers the full 300 megahertz to 300 gigahertz, it will help to a degree. And if you want to insulate your house and put up some sort of screening device, you can use one of those and it will screech where most of the microwaves are coming from, and you can screen them off and put it up and they stop, and you think, that's it, I've done that. But if you want to know everything that is coming in, because they tend not to pick up, the pulses now are 0 to 600, and that won't pick those up.
Yeah.
If you want to pick up everything, you will need to hire somebody with a full spectrum analyzer, and they leave it there connected to a computer for about a week.
Yeah.
Going around like a lighthouse,
yeah,
because you've got your military, your road services, there's about 60 different organisations, plus all the phones and everything else.
So what you mentioned there, you said you could screen it and see if the signal drops. What would you use, like a 3mm aluminium sheet or something like that, or what would you use as a screen?
If you're going to screen, go to a professional organisation like ESUK, Electrosensitivity UK. They have the professors, the medical doctors, and they have a directory of recognised screening materials.
Mm.
Don't do it yourself by using tinfoil or whatever, because you can actually make things worse. You can actually box the microwaves in and make things worse. And they've got to be earthed. It's not a cheap process, but you have got to go to an expert and get expert advice.
All right, thanks for that. I'm going to go back to something that you said before about the fact that the Tetra system is an experiment. Because when somebody brings out a brand new concept or product to consumers, normally they have to prove that it's safe first before it's used. But with electromagnetic radiation, the opposite is true. They have assumed it is safe, and then when people complain, they then ask for proof that it's not safe.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant question.
So tell us why conclusive proof is difficult, if not impossible, for someone who's complaining about microwaves.
Yeah. Well, can I just go back to the beginning of what you said?
Yeah.
They brought out microwaves, and like a drug trial, normally people prove that they are safe. Now, a top secret document, which came my way actually said, and we're going back to the very beginning here when cell phones were coming out, it was published by the American government, and it was addressed to all Western governments. And it said, and I'm going to paraphrase this, it said, deceive the populations, because if they know the truth, it will have an impact on industrial output or profit. In other words, lie to the people, otherwise it will affect our profit margin. We and other Western governments set up a committee. We worked out how to lie or deceive the population to the known. And it was published by the World Health Organization, and they kept it secret. And I've got that secret document too.
Right. Can you share that with me at all?
Absolutely.
Right.
And of course, 2,000 military papers used in microwave warfare. 2,000 knew. We knew before they even came out how dangerous they were. But they also knew the profit that was going to be made. Mm-hmm. So they said, lie to the people or deceive the people, and we will make our industrial profit. That was the first bit. So there was no safety trial because they knew that they weren't safe.
Right. And do you think
that's the first bit? The second part of your question, which was
why conclusive proof is difficult.
Why conclusive proof? That is something they say. They put it out and then said there is no conclusive proof or no convincing evidence. In other words, convincing to them. Mm. No conclusive proof. Now, I've said this at conferences. And I talk to hundreds of scientists, usually around 400, and I explain it to them. And I say, look, if one of you stood up now and shot me dead, you would go to trial and a jury would no doubt find you guilty. They require a balance of probability. If you want conclusive proof, that scientifically and medically is unobtainable. Because in the time it took you to fire that gun and the bullet to reach me, there are thousands of things in my body that could have stopped and caused me to just drop dead. Mm. Now, for conclusive proof, you've got to prove that one of those things did not happen and the bullets went into a dead person. Mm. There is no conclusive proof. This is why they use that phrase. They've used it with smoking. They've used it with Agent Orange and all the other things that the government have got away with. It's their catchphrase. They, fine, give us conclusive proof and we'll listen.
This program is sponsored by MouseMesh. Mice can squeeze through gaps the thickness of a pencil. This simple, effective solution will not only prevent mice, it's also a barrier against wasps, bees, and slugs.